What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Delegator. He lost, I think, the big chance to do that with Flores in the more meaningful side of the ball.
And maybe if he did that, some of these in-game things that drive us nuts, he would get better at.
Because he'd be focused on the situation and not calling the play or doing this or that.
He'd be concerned more about the macro of the game itself than the minutia of what's going on.
I think that ship sailed, and you can pretty much guarantee what he is going to be like. The minute Flores came in here and you had him in the building and a chance for Mike to like go pound the table and say to Art, not only are we bringing this guy in, I'm going to let him be the defensive coordinator. He's already overqualified. If we need to demote Terrell Austin, fine. If we need to like spend more money, trust me, this is something we have to do. He'd have gotten his way. Now, Brian Flores did not have a great night last night. Let's pretend that game didn't happen. He still turned one of the worst defenses in football into one of the best in the span of two seasons. But Mike, the second he brought him in, but then kept him as basically a senior defensive, consultant. I mean, there was conjecture about what his role actually was, and then let him walk. That tells you all you need to know. It does. This guy is an objectively better defensive mind than Mike at this point. The results back that up, given the rosters he's done it with.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't want to keep him in the building when they had the chance to do it.
Like, here's an idea. They don't do this. They don't pay coordinators not to work. Terrell Austin has another year left on his contract. Okay? Terrell Austin's record as a defensive coordinator outside of working under Mike Tomlin was pretty bad in the NFL with the Bengals and the Lions. Just it's
not
there.
One of the worst defenses in the league, I think, at each stop.
You want to show me or prove to me that you are, you know, serious about things being different and being willing to try something else, just kind of strip away the power of what you're doing on defense and hire somebody who's available, who we know has a great defensive resume, maybe not as a head coach. Matt Eberflus just got fired in Chicago. Terrible head coach, like Dick LeBeau is a terrible head coach in Cincinnati, well-regarded as a defensive play caller and a defensive schemer. Hell, even though he's got a crazy personality, I think he interviewed for the defensive coordinator job in Dallas last year. Bring Rex Ryan into coach your
Tony,
defense.
How about Robert Saleh?
Robert Saleh's another one. Thank you. I completely blanked on him. There you go.
I'd hire Robert Saleh tomorrow to coach the defense.
Any of those three guys, and if Mike said, I'm true to my word. We're going to do things differently. I'm going to let this guy coach a defense and build the defense here. That would be the start of getting me and I think others to buy back in on what their strategy or what their plan is or what they're, you know, hoping for or trying to be here.
It would be something different in action and not in word, Pony. That's the bottom line. It would be an actual tangible sign that we've said we need to change some things. We've said there's going to be differences. We're not going to keep doing the same thing. Here is something that actually matters and is going to get better. I mean, like, I look at Philly as the gold standard for a lot of this stuff. They collapsed down the stretch last year with a way better roster, and what did they do? Specifically, like, on the defensive side of the ball. They brought in Vic Fangio, who's about damn near as good as it gets as a schemer and tactician.
And they brought in Kellen Moore to coach the offense,
right,
who had success in Dallas.
They made, and that is a franchise, to be very clear here, better roster, better constructed, has won a Super Bowl far more recently than you, and they didn't sit on their hands with that good roster
they
once
fired
it cratered.
Both coordinators. That would be like the Steelers after this year
and
firing
you know what? And you know what?
Smith
Nick's,
and Austin.
Nick Sirianni's ass was on the broiler too after last year. They made the
playoffs.
Well,
yeah, if you're the Philly coach, your ass is always on the broiler.
But my point is they made the playoffs and they realized things were bad. And this is where I think I go up above Mike Tomlin and I say Art Rooney needs to be a better owner of this football team. Look at what the team across the state's doing. Oh, by the way, Hurts is not like a great quarterback, but they are alive and favored heavily to get to the NFC title game because they weren't afraid to make changes.
Donnie, what's your reaction? Tomlin basically saying, I get why fans want me fired. Do you really get it? Because now we're citing some things that Mike could do differently that I think would cause fans to actually start to believe that Mike isn't just doing the same thing and expecting different results.
Well, he said himself that words are hollow and talk is cheap. Yeah, like we can bring that stuff up because he can say that he gets it and he understands it, but we know that there is no pressure and there never has been pressure from the owner above him to actually make that change. So, like, he can say all he wants, yeah, I think that, you know, what I've done, I've come up short the last handful of years. It's warranted a lot of other coaches losing their jobs. Okay, he can say that. He has never felt pressure. I think I said it last year when they lost the two games back-to-back at home to the Patriots and the Cardinals. I said it. Seat warmers probably aren't even an option on his vehicle. He has never felt his ass get hot over the last 18 years.
I don't think he's ever been like justifiably humbled by his
failures.
By failure. Exactly.
I don't think he's ever had. We said at the beginning of the show, the word is, I don't think there's been, and to be fair, I extend this to Art Rooney too. It maybe doubly so to Art Rooney. I don't think there's been an ounce of real honest, not publicly stated. I'm talking about like in the bowels of that stadium when each guy is alone with their thoughts about professionally what they're doing. An ounce of genuine introspection there. I really don't. It was like 19 years ago, a couple days ago, was the Michelle Therrien rant. He says he care. He don't care. Well, he says he's going to change. He don't change.
When we were going through the holes on this roster earlier in the show, and so to be fair, if we're going to give Mike Tomlin the lion's share of the blame for those weaknesses, we should do the other. We should flip it and say he gets credit for their success stories. You know, the great draft picks they've made. Well, as we sit here right now, how many of those guys do you think they actually have on their team?
Like great success stories?
Yeah, like
Frazier looks like a really good success.
Okay, so that was a great pick.
Here.
Watt was an amazing pick.
Hayward was a terrific pick.
Second to last pick in the first round, just a
we're just talking
awesome
strictly draft, right?
I mean, you could even extend it out and say free agent pickups and trades.
I think Deshaun Elliott, including then him, would be one I would say. Peyton Wilson looks like it's going to be a very good draft pick. But now even now I'm starting to stretch the definition because
very good draft pick.
Looks
you come
like,
out of this season
well,
thinking
I'm
he's going to be like a
he looks like he's going to be a
Pro Bowl inside linebacker,
good to very good player, I think. But even then, again, I'm stretching the definition here because there are so few slam dunks. I mean, I think Frazier looks like he's going to be their center for the next decade.
Jaylen Warren was a really good find as an undrafted guy. Chris Boswell was a great pickup as a kicker.
God, we're talking kicker here.
Alex Highsmith was a great pick in the third
round. Herbig. Do we give Herbig that credit or no?
Yeah, I think Herbig was
Do we give Sayamalu that credit?
No.
Can't give Freiermuth that, not even close.
Because think about what Sayamalu means. They created a hole there by trading a great guard because they didn't like his work ethic or his personality, Kevin Dotson, and they gave him away to L.A. for basically
he's
nothing.
He's getting like $20 million a year now because he's been really
and
good.
And he's been one of the best guards in the NFL, and you replaced him with an older player who's not as good.
They also played him out of position here.
Right.
Another thing. They played him on the wrong side. You can't say it about Joey Porter Jr., just not... not good enough yet.
Not a bad pick.
But not like a slam dunk or a home run or a can you believe they stole this guy? What a success story. A player seriously, I hate bringing up the Eagles again, but I mean it's useful too. Where are the Zach Bond stories here for this team? Or where are the Cooper DeJean looks like he's going to be really good. Quinyon Mitchell. Like all these guys are either first-year players with them or rookies straight away who are hugely helpful to them.
Diamonds in the rough, guys.
Well, like Bond is the classic example. Holy crap, we brought this guy in. He was disappointing for the Saints as an edge guy. Our coordinator, who by the way we hired because we sucked last year on defense, said no, you're an off ball linebacker. Well, coached him up, and now he's a first team All Pro.
Look at the Rams defense. I think it's the youngest in the league, and they for years didn't have first round picks. And Aaron Donald retired. In the last five games here, I think they've held every opponent under 13 points.
Maybe Les Snead shouldn't say F them picks anymore, because when he gives his scouts picks, they're balling out.
412-928-9370.
And some of those positions, by the way, like on their defense, Pony, that's independent of, like, do you have a quarterback? Because you know how you could say, like, if you have the quarterback, he can make offensive picks look better? Those defensive picks are up, like, by the Rams or by the Eagles.
Here's Bob next. Hello, Bob.
Hello. Hey, thanks for taking my call, and I'm a first-time caller.
Nice, Bob. Thank you for listening.
I just been a Steelers fan since the 60s. And
does this feel like the Bill Austin era all over again?
Well, kind of, sort of. But what I would like to know is why we just don't build our offensive line and go from there.
They've drafted offensive tackles in the first round the last 2 years. I think they had the highest paid guard combination between Sayamalu and Daniels in the entire league.
They drafted a center in the second round.
And they drafted a center in the second round.
Oh, I understand that, but what I'm trying to say here is you can go down the list and look at these guys. Either they're doing something wrong when it comes to teaching them, or they're just drafted.
Well, I think you got to the point of who's going to be one of the scapegoats there, Bob. Thanks for calling and call again. I think Pat Meyer's getting scapegoated here soon. I don't think he's done a good job this year.
I wouldn't be so sure of that because I think he signed an extension after the end of last year.
My mistake. I didn't look that up. I should have looked up to see if he still had years under contract left. Well, forget about that then. You know where they screwed up with their O-line? They got Ben two new shiny offensive skill position toys in the first two rounds in Najee's draft year in 2021.
I think we share the same sentiment. To be quite honest with you, we're really disappointed that we're not working this week, and we have a real commitment to making sure that we're not in that same space 12 months from now. That's cool in spirit, but what's transpiring in a tangible way in terms of how we construct these upcoming days and weeks and months is going to be critical to making sure that there's teeth to that. And that's what I was talking about when I was saying words don't weigh a lot. It's about what we do, and particularly what we do over the upcoming days and weeks.
Mike Tomlin on the message from Art Rooney, what their conversation was like, both disappointed and both in lockstep on, hey, there's work to do. We got to get better results, yada, yada, yada. I would feel this way if I'm Art. He might, and I think he probably did feel this way. I think he gave Tomlin a pass for the last couple of years of Ben, and then the first couple of years coming out of Ben. Because Art didn't want to rip the Band-Aid off and move on from Ben. He wanted to give him his swan song. He wanted to give him his flowers at the end. He wanted to give him his day in the sun and retire a Steeler. Yes.
Yeah, it's a sentimental mistake. Say it. Fine, I'll be the only one. Because Donnie's over there. He shed tears at the final Ben home game. A sentiment-based mistake by the owner.
And then there's going to be some growing pains with a quarterback transition. Rookie year, Jaden Daniels, CJ Stroud, Ben, exceptions. Usually guys aren't great from year one and win games. I mean, look at Peyton Manning.
Bo Nix was pretty good. Not great.
That's a good one. But so I'm saying, looking at it from Art's perspective, I could see him thinking the bar shouldn't be very high in those years.
Road's about to get bumpy here for a couple years.
This year was supposed to be year three of Kenny Pickett. When you draft a quarterback in the first round, you're supposed to be living good. When you're in that sweet spot of year three, year four, when the guy now has a sense for how the NFL game is played, the system he's in,
he's supposed to peak around then.
You're not paying him a lot of money, so the roster around the guy is great. I mean, this really should... That's... Ben Roethlisberger won his Super Bowl his second year. He was in his mid-20s when he won his second Super Bowl. I mean, he was...
Mahomes won a Super Bowl in his
what? The team had his third year as a starter.
Third year as a starter.
Ben Roethlisberger had more success, team success, early in his career than late. So that's where we're supposed to be right now. And we're not, because they started over. And what did they start over for? They started over for a 36-year-old former Super Bowl-winning quarterback. And Dulac said when he was signed, the idea was the other guys could only get them so far. They needed the veteran presence that Wilson provided and his track record of success in big games. And with Fields, it was the allure of just the athleticism, and maybe the Bears don't know what the hell they're doing, and you give them a new environment, you give him a new start, he does better, and you got the same results. So of all the years since like their last playoff win, I could honestly see this one pissing off Art the most. Or it should, at least, I think, anger him the most.
Do you think it will? That's the question.
You say intellectually. Based on the way Mike described their conversation, no. I don't feel that way.
Art's likely to talk next week, right?
I would think so,
typically, that's how it would go. The State of the Steelers post-mortem address, you know, he always, I'm sure he will say, I'd prefer to be doing this later in the year and so on. I think you are going to get, if you got boilerplate from Mike today, with very few exceptions, one or two, you know, surprise answers or not polished answers, I think you're going to get that and then some from Art. I just think it's going to be, we had a transition year at quarterback. We still made the playoffs. We were within a game. You know what I mean? Like, it's just going to be a lot of the same old, man. I just don't. You're laying out a very educated, articulate case for why he should be more frustrated. I don't really think I can poke holes in it. I enjoyed listening to you lay it out. But that is irrelevant compared to what the owner actually thinks.
Because I think they, at the sport and the game's most important position, where every team left here has a legit quarterback. There's no team that dragged the corpse of some guy or some bum
to the divisional
round.
Mm-hmm.
Matthew Stafford's won a Super Bowl. Jared Goff has been to a Super Bowl and was a number one pick. Jalen Hurts had a lead in the Super Bowl with 2 minutes left and almost beat Mahomes.
Very nearly an MVP.
Jaden Daniels is a wunderkind quarterback. C.J. Stroud has won a playoff game 2 straight years. Josh Allen is a unicorn. Lamar Jackson is a unicorn. Patrick Mahomes is starting to enter the conversation for
the GOAT,
for one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. So this plan of, well, there's other ways to skin a cat and other ways to win in the NFL. Not really. You've got to get that position right. And even, say, 2 years ago when they missed the playoffs, Kenny had big finishes in his rookie year to win them games against the Raiders and Ravens, and I fell victim to it. I was hypnotized by it. But the owner could have looked at it like, hey, and he did. That's a positive year because we think we've made progress at quarterback and we might have something with our young guy. We don't have any of that to fall back on this year.
No, they're as blind and as in the wilderness when it comes to quarterback as they have been at any point in time post Roethlisberger, and you are supposed to have your answers by now.
I mean, Donnie's looking at Justin Fields and trying to suss out in his head, like, maybe we can play him and suck just enough to get another quarterback.
Because 2026 and 2027 are supposed to be big quarterback drafts.
Because the reason why you're, Donnie, not transfixed by Fields, but the reason why you're inclined to go with him is because you think he'll either somehow get it and he'll become a good quarterback next year with a chance to play, or they suck just enough to get you another one. Which outcome or result do you think is more likely? He puts it together and turns out to be a good quarterback, or he's bad enough where you might be able to get another one?
I actually think bad enough to maybe get another one. Because as bad as the last, 5-6 weeks have been, there are also a couple of other games that the Steelers won this year that I'm not sure they win with Justin Fields. Like, I don't know if they win that first Cincinnati game.
I don't think they do.
Because Russ played out
Russ
of his mind.
Them.
I don't think they win the Washington game.
Washington game, he makes a baller throw on a 3rd and long facing a pass rush that was dropped in the bucket. It's not a throw Fields has shown he can make. Yeah.
But think about that. I mean, that takes 2 wins away and maybe even one more.
You're out of the playoffs. You're 8-9 at that point, at best. Pony, I am not doing this to twist the knife. I'm not. I tried to be optimistic about it. Their huge sin here really was just being so scared of the idea that Kenny Pickett might turn into some great pro that they said, we have to pick him. Not only do we have to pick him, we have to pick him with the first available chance we get in that draft. When you probably could have, definitely could have had him in the 2nd round and maybe even in the 3rd round. Like, He just was not a highly sought after player, and they punted 2 years essentially on that. Which,
well, in your opinion, they also punted another two by sticking with Ben.
They did, though.
So it's like
that,
four lost years.
You well, and you can also say, now, what? How old was Ben when he tore his elbow up? 35? 36?
36?
36. Yeah, entering his year 37. Because, no, he's 37, Pony. It was the 2019 season.
He was 37 years old, and then he played 38 and 39?
Yeah, because he was born in 82, yep. Right?
Same age as Arthur Smith.
So you've got, God. You've got it, but you've got at that point, a 37-year-old quarterback who just shredded his elbow. We all know it's a serious injury, okay? And you had a chance. Now, it would have taken some gumption, but you had a chance knowing some of the quarterbacks that were going to be in that next draft class to say, we're going to let the chips fall where they may. We drafted Mason Rudolph. Maybe he shows us a lot this year. And when that didn't happen, you just say, we're just going to, he and Duck Hodges are going to play. We're not going to trade for Minka. We're not going to try to move heaven and earth to win with defense. And you'd have had access to a Tua or a Herbert. I know Herbert is no prince right now in the playoffs. He's got his own problems. But I think most people would rather ride with Justin Herbert for the next 5 to 10 years than whatever the hell the Steelers are doing. But they didn't do that. This is mismanagement and I think like an organizational cowardice in the sense of we don't want to have to find out what's behind door, you know, the question mark door at that position. And now look where it's gotten them. Nowhere. Nowhere.
The most accurate thing I think Mike said in his entire press conference today was, I'm not in the mood to sell you guys on optimism. I'm not one to be optimistic right now. Good. But because it would come across as complete BS. There aren't a lot of things to brag about. Not just because of the way the last game went, but what you have foundationally to win next year.
Even though he said that, Pony, and that's all true, and I agree with him on that, you're still getting a guy who, when he's asked about his own bona fides to be the guy that helps turn this around, does want to preach optimism. I believe in myself. Mm-hmm. I believe in my abilities. Well, the rest of us on the outside read that and say, wait a minute, why?
Here's Levi on the fan. Hello, Levi.
Hey, how's it going?
Can't do it.
Sorry, Levi. You were a staticky mess there on
Damian
the line.
Damian on the fan. Hello, Damian.
Hey, gents. Love the show. Listen
Thank you.
Every day that I can.
Appreciate
how are you?
It. We're good.
Hey, slightly off topic, but, you know, we're sticking with the offense, and I know we're blowing off a lot of steam. But one thing I can't possibly get, it seems like it's been at least a decade or more, that it's constantly our receiver room. We know it's Michael Weberly and freaking AB and all the other guys. But shouldn't some blame, I know, you know, Tomlin gets, he has to shoulder a ton of blame. But why in the world can't we find, I don't know, Zach Kazani from anywhere, but why can't we find somebody that has respect to that room? Why can't it be on them to control their freaking room and the
who's
team
a guy,
wide receivers?
Who's a wide receivers coach that you actually think would command George Pickens' respect?
Hines Ward?
No, but
he went to Georgia.
Who cares?
I don't want to go that route, but I mean, maybe somebody that, I'm not saying it's a Hall of Famer, that we're, you know, obviously he's not going to be a wide receivers coach, but somebody that's got some, you know, leg in the game, you know, that has some respect.
The real thing like, here is, Damian, it's like, can you find a guy that gets through to George Pickens? And I'm pretty convinced that there's not a person out there coaching who's going to get through to George Pickens the way people want it to happen.
I agree with what you're saying. The problem, too, is about wanting to have like a guy that commands respect or is a disciplinarian with the wide receivers and gets them to fall in line is, if the ultimate boss still lets guys get away with bloody murder because of how talented they are, players are smart enough to pick up on that and will be like, okay,
usually
you want to give me a hard time? I'm gonna go over your head right to the head coach and he's going to side with me on this because I'm more important than you are.
That's why, Pony, I always thought the healthy dynamic. I remember people saying this about Mike Sullivan and Phil Kessel, was that Tockett, the assistant coach, was always the good cop and Sullivan's the bad cop. I thought in most of these situations, the head coach is generally the bad cop because it doesn't work the other way around. And then the assistant coach, the position coach, is the guy who builds you up after he tears you down.
Perfect. Perfectly said.
I don't know that a lot of dramatic changes need to be made regarding TJ Watt, to be quite honest with you. I think his resume and production speaks for itself. He's been ridiculously consistent over his stay here and even in the midst of the 2024 season that didn't unfold the way that any of us would like. And I got a lot of things that have my attention before I start getting into TJ Watt-like production in terms of my to-do list.
Disagree strongly here on Tomlin Takes for the final time. And the 2024 season. I've got a lot of things on my priority list. Well, when it's your highest paid player and he falls off a cliff late in the year and in the biggest of games, you absolutely need to spend time figuring out, getting to the bottom of why he was not a more impactful player. And if it's as simple as he wasn't healthy, then say as much.
Why was he playing, though, in games down the stretch if he wasn't healthy?
And the problem on that was Tomlin did, at this press conference today, say, really no big injuries to report, guys.
Yeah, they were as healthy as they were, period, going in, I felt like. And then coming out of that game, not particularly beat up. Just,
I'm hoping it's like Hayward, where he had that groin injury and he wasn't the same player after it last year, and then he came back strong this year and was an all-pro and defied Father Time. But that was a much more serious injury. I mean, it required surgery in season and time off and time to recover and time to recuperate and then rushing back and just trying to play.
Which ankle was it for what? I'm serious. This is a serious question here.
Right?
I'm just saying, would it have been his push-off ankle coming from his usual spot over right tackle?
I thought it was the push-off ankle.
Man, okay, if it was, and this is obviously not
definitive.
Because
we had the suggestions.
Move him around because then you'll be able to.
Dr. Chow said flip him.
But apparently TJ did, acknowledged, yeah, maybe you have to be more open to doing stuff like that. I mean, come on. You are treating that
coach
guy.
Coach is afraid to criticize him. That's what this is.
You're treating that player with how much you pay him like he's a quarterback on your defense as far as impact on the game plan and on the opponent. You better be doing every damn thing imaginable to try to unlock him. Because if you're not, and this is going to be the TJ Watt moving forward, I have no desire to see him as a Steeler for another contract term.
Mike Tomlin on what Najee Harris has meant to the Steelers.
Naj has had an awesome 4 years here. I understand that he is a free agent. Again, it's very at the very beginnings of that process in terms of us assessing what we're capable of doing or what we desire to do. And I'd imagine it's the same thing from a player's perspective. It's assured we've had a good experience with him, and obviously the ridiculous consistency in his performance in terms of producing four straight 1,000-yard seasons speaks for itself.
I would have asked as a follow-up in that press conference, well, then why didn't you pick up his fifth-year option, Mike?
That would have been another one that would have made him very mad and been very accurate to ask.
If he's been so awesome and so unbelievably consistent, why didn't you want to continue to do business with the guy when, based on what running backs got in free agency last year, it's not that expensive? Just a bold-faced lie by him. Jaylen Warren played more in the Ravens game, as he should. And Najee's production again in that game was next to nothing. And by the way, when Najee looked like he might be heating up early in that game, a couple of strong runs in a row, it was third and short. He took him off the field and they went empty set. I thought this was a good question. Hey, Mike.
Can I say one thing
please, very
quickly about Najee? I don't think any one player on this team is more the personification, and it's not his fault so much. I mean, he's trying to do what he's paid to do of their, very backwards approach to offense than Najee. Short runs, when he gets it going, everyone goes, hell yeah, because everybody likes what? Well, no. Everybody likes the aesthetic appeal of watching a running back bulldoze another team. See Henry, Derek. But, when you're getting some of the least efficient work from your running game of any team in the league and you are doggedly sticking to it, that just makes you stubborn and stupid. Anyway.
Donnie, if you had to guess, how much smaller is Najee Harris than Derrick Henry?
Well, Henry's what?
6'3", 250. Yeah, they have nice round number measurements there for him.
I feel like he's surprisingly not that much smaller, 6'2", 235, 240.
So Pro Football Reference lists Henry at 6'2", 247.
He's 250. Just 6'2".
And Pro Football Reference lists Najee at 6'1", 242. So a difference of 1 inch and 5 pounds. They look like two totally different human beings when they run the ball.
More crucially, they run like two totally different human beings, particularly when Derrick Henry gets into the open field. Henry's 44-yard touchdown. If Najee breaks that run, gets to the point where he's in the open field, how many yards does he get? And don't say he scores a touchdown because we know he ain't getting to the goal line.
Well, here's a point where I will actually defend Najee Harris. Now, yeah, sometimes he looks like he's running with a pair of jeans on. But nobody does it like Derrick Henry, where they're that big and they're that fast.
Is it fair for me to say, though, if you draft a guy in the first round at that position, you think he'll be a reasonable facsimile of Derrick Henry?
Well, yeah,
plus Derrick Henry was a second rounder.
Exactly.
I know that. I was going to get to that, but I knew I'd have the data boys on my case.
I thought this was a good question. Mike, are you worried your message has gotten stale?
You know, I don't worry about messaging resonating. I speak with great clarity and transparency. I've learned that over a long time at this level. I know what works and what doesn't. That component of it is probably less of a concern of more strategic things and other discussions that dictate outcome. Messaging is such a small component of what it is that we do. It just really is. There's complexities to it.
Such crap. Because the Hard Knocks thing, the number one point that people have tried to make as a way of building up Mike as a coach is, look at how he messages things to his team all week. Donnie, look at the way he went to Nick Herbig and sold him on the idea of going up against Orlando Brown and how pivotal that matchup was. Look at how he stressed with Peyton Wilson, how he was going to have to in that game against the Ravens the first time. Something was going to happen with Justice Hill, and he was going to have to make a play in that matchup. Mike downplays messaging because I think he hates the idea that people look at him mostly as a motivator coach and not a tactician and X's and O's guy. So in that setting, he's going to try to poo-poo the idea that messaging is a big deal.
I sort of disagree. I don't disagree with you. I took it in a very different direction, though, the way I interpreted his answer. I think that the messaging thing was a companion question to something else that was asked either before or after it, essentially implying, like, did your team quit on you in that game, like, effort-wise? Because if the messaging was strong enough and you were still, like, resonating with your players, there's no way they'd basically give, like, kind of a dog effort like Herb Street alluded to. So I think he was going to give messaging very little attention there, because I think he saw that question for what I saw it for, which is... Did your team just kind of roll over and show its belly?
He got asked straight up if effort was the problem against the Ravens.
The Ravens present a unique challenge in terms of their run game. You got to play 11-on-11 football, and at times we could have performed better schematically, and at times we could have performed better as individuals. Particularly the last two games that we played them, we didn't do a good enough job of controlling that component of the game, and that leads to possession down play and situational play, and we didn't have them in enough one-dimensional circumstances to create the type of negativity that's been a calling card of us winning those games with consistency.
Right, so he tried to make it not about their motivation for the game and that answer, more about schematics.
Because I think it's a way more damning indictment of any coach, especially a guy who has the reputation as a master motivator, that your team didn't try as hard as they could have versus your team got out-schemed. That's one of the few times I think you would see Mike Tomlin say, yeah, I got out-chess-matched.
Which, when you have the highest paid defense in the league, it should never look that way. Like,
I agree. Although he did get out-schemed, I already saw a couple write-ups about that.
Right, but you can't just write this off as they got bad luck and they've run into Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, and Patrick Mahomes the last three times in the playoffs. They've allowed those guys to play some of their best playoff games against them. Their defense giving up, like, not historic point totals in this Ravens game, but 300 rushing yards.
Who was the last team to give up more rushing yards in the playoffs, Don? You even have it at close ready? Toponi knows it, so I was just going to ask you. In 2012, Packers to that Kaepernick team gave up 324. Brutal. Think about what that number stands for and what the Steelers' rushing total stands for and what this franchise purports to stand for.
And that gets back to the game I was watching from 50 years ago last night. They held O.J. Simpson to 40-something yards in that playoff game.
Is the football in those games, in your opinion, since you watched them from start to finish, better or worse quality-wise for aesthetic appeal as a viewer? You know, it's like J.J. Redick probably couldn't watch an old Bob Cousy NBA game. They're taking set shots and everything. You know, they're doing, like, whirly bird layups and all that nonsense. I watched those games from the 70s, man, and sometimes it just seems so 3 yards in a cloud of dust. I can't get that into it.
I would disagree with you on the game that I watched. I mean, Bradshaw's winging the ball out there to Swan, actually, as a rookie, was very involved in that game plan.
And then it was all downhill from here.
There was like a jet sweep play that actually worked with him in that game. Dude, Bradshaw was fun.
He was slinging it.
Yeah, man.
In big games, he was slinging it.
That's kind of the that's the kind of thing that's a little bit of a misnomer about the 70s. Yes, they ran the ball a lot, but I feel like quarterbacks took more shots downfield. I don't have the numbers to back that up, but anecdotally, it seems like the dudes just let it rip a little bit more.
Well, yeah, that's why they all had like 25 interceptions a year.
Well, and the defensive backs were allowed to mug guys too.
Yeah, that didn't help.
And when a dude went to throw the ball, he could get absolutely clonked on the head. It didn't matter.
That's when men were men, Pony.